We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And joining us right now, the former manager of the New York Mets. He's also a hit on Twitter right now. And that, of course, is Bobby Valentine. Bobby, Joe and Evan, how you been?
Bobby, what's up,
Joe,
bro?
And
how
Evan,
are you?
I've been fine, Joe and Evan, and I hope you guys are doing well and staying safe.
We are.
Especially you, Joe, you old man.
I am an old man, Bobby. Well, you, hold on. You're a little older than me, Bobby. Now, you're better looking. Hold on. You're much better looking. I'm sure you have more money, but you are a little older than me.
I know I'm older than you, Joe.
But I love you, Bobby. You know I love you, Bobby. You know you're one of my all-time favorite Met managers. You're right up there. You're right up there with Gil and Davey. So there you go. I mean, you can't do better than that. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm honored. Thanks, Joe. Thank you. I really am. No. I really am. Thank you.
Bobby, we love you. We loved you as a man. We wish you were managing the team now. Are you kidding?
I take it.
Oh, yeah. Right now. Like today.
Well, that'd mean there'd be baseball.
Well, when there was baseball again and you were the manager of the Mets, we'd be – with all due respect to Mr. Rojas, we don't know what he is yet. But you know what? We'd love to have Bobby Valentine back as the manager of the Mets. At least I would, for sure.
Well, good to be with you guys. Thank you, Joe.
I got to tell you,
what's going on? Let's talk baseball something.
Yeah, some of your tweets lately have been fascinating. First of all, you're singing Meet the Mets and showing off your incredible baseball collection that you've got. And I thought what was really interesting is, I guess it was this morning, you're showing pictures and video of Lou Lamoriello coaching baseball. I thought that was fascinating, Bob.
Really? When was that?
Thanks, Evan. You know what's crazy about this time? I mean, I'm working. The job with Sacred Heart University has just gotten more complex because now you're getting directives from the NC2A every day and the NEC or conference. And, you know, 100 coaches are wondering what's going on. 800 students are wondering what's going on. But because I am incarcerated, I found some old tapes that I didn't even know were in these boxes, and there were hundreds of them, and I've been going through them, and I have found some amazing things. Lou Lamoriello coaching the Yarmouth whatever we were in the Cape Cod League in 1967, where he plucked me out of high school. He let me be his center fielder and leadoff hitter. It's amazing that we're still friends after all these years, and he was just as amazed to see those videos as you were, Evan.
Mm, wow. So this is when Bobby was in high school, Ev? Is that what this was?
Yeah. This was So you were – it was 1967. You were a junior in high school, and there's Lou Lamoriello walking around. You know, we've always said Lou could be a GM of, like, any sport and probably be successful. We've seen great success with the Devils, now with the Islanders.
Right.
But Lou probably could have been a pretty good manager in Major League Baseball. Wouldn't surprise any of us, right?
And he really loved baseball. I can tell you what – real quick on that story, he was the assistant baseball coach and assistant hockey coach at Providence College in 1967. He came down to Stamford, Connecticut to have a dinner with another assistant coach, basketball coach, Billy O'Connor at the time, and he stayed over to watch a baseball game. I happened to be playing in it. I had one of those silly games where I caught a lot of balls, ran around the bases, you know, did all those things that you want to do when you're playing. And after the game, he went over to my mom and dad and said, listen, I'm coaching in Cape Cod. It's a college league, but I think your kid can play. How about you let me take care of him for the summer? And I think it would be really good for him and good for me. And I'll be a doggone if I didn't go up. And, you know, I hit like 297, and I played every game, and he introduced me to every scout around, and I got to be a number one draft choice because of it.
Talking to Bobby Valentine. Now, you were – Bobby, you were a great athlete. Right? I mean, you played – tell me if I'm wrong. I know you went to USC. You played football. You played baseball. You were a big football player in high school too, right?
Yeah, so, you know, for those years of 4 years in high school, I got to play every game. And, yeah, because I was fast and I guess I was tough and all that stuff. And I guess I had good balance. And, yeah, I was a good football player. I'm the one of the only or the only three-time All-State football players, I guess, in the history of the great state of Connecticut.
Were you a running back? What was your position, Bob?
I ran, and I caught the ball, and I played defense. I never came off the field. I kicked. I punted.
Wow.
I played DB, you know, did the whole nine yards.
When you got recruited to USC, there was no thought of playing football there, was there?
Oh, I was going on a football scholarship.
You were? Okay.
The gig was that in 1968, that Pac-8 at the time adopted a rule where freshmen could play varsity sport. John McKay, who's the football coach, and Rod Dato, who was the baseball coach, were good friends, and they decided, at least in talk, that I was going to be able to play in the spring baseball and then learn all the plays and then go out for football. And it was going to be a nice marriage, but 2 weeks after I signed my letter of intent to go to University of Southern California, the Dodgers drafted me and offered me $65,000 and $1 million worth of good advice, and I took it and went played for the Dodgers.
Interesting.
We're talking to Bobby Valentine. I remember when you took over late in 1996 for the Mets, and it was a weird year because they were the three individual accomplishments that were going on. Lance Johnson was having a great year. Todd Hundley's breaking the catching home run record. And Bernard Gilkey, you take over kind of late in that season. What was it like, especially you had a lot of experience in Texas, you managed in Japan, and now you take over kind of this, you know, this talented baseball team, but a team that's on their way to 90 losses. Did you have a sense that the turnaround could be quick? Because obviously the next year you guys shock everybody, you're in a playoff race and win 88 games. But take me through kind of taking over late in 96.
Well, I got to be in spring training with that group, and then I was managing in AAA Norfolk for most of that season. So I was following the team. I knew the talent, at least from afar and from spring training. I thought that there was enough of talent to be good. The problem was, as it was presented to me, like when I got hired by Joe McElvain, that we were in the same division as the Atlanta Braves, and that we didn't only have to get good, we had to get real good. And, we went right down the basics and, started with the pitchers butting better, hitting better, and fielding better. That was like one of our criteria because, as you guys know, the Braves pitchers could hit in the middle of the lineup, and they were the fifth infielder out on the diamond. So we wanted to catch up there. We wanted to, get a little pride back in the organization. Being in the minor leagues, I found that there wasn't a real continuity of thought throughout the entire organization. There were, there's a thought in A ball and Double A, and I have my thoughts, and then Major League had their thoughts. And so we tried to get continuity of thought, and I think that all helped the culture get better and, and also helped to weed out the weak.
Talking to Bobby Valentine. So, okay, so the first full season, 97, you guys go 88-74. But there really wasn't, it was nice. It was a decent year, but, you still didn't have that buzz that you felt about the team. Tell me, were you involved at all? Of course, Piazza gets traded to you guys the next year. Were you involved at all in the Piazza deal? And as that was happening, was coming into fruition, what were your thoughts about all that, Bobby?
Well, we had Todd Hundley. He was, had a little elbow situation, and, he was behind the plate. So I didn't think we had a chance for Piazza. When he got traded to Miami, You know, there was the talk in L.A. I was asked about him. I said, by God, I love him, but how could we get him? We saw he went to Miami, and I canceled that thought. And a couple days later, Nelson came walking by the batting cage and said something about Mike Piazza under his breath, as Nelson would do, kind of whispering, hey, Mike Piazza, Mike Piazza. And I looked at him, and lo and behold, I went in and was changing. I was actually in the bathroom with the door shut when Steve Phillips came in and knocked on the door and said, hey, are you sitting down? And I said, yeah. He said, we just traded for Piazza. And, you know, I don't want to say what I said, but it had something to do with what I was doing.
Right, I understand.
Said, you have to be kidding me.
Right, right. No, we understand.
No, I think
pretty good.
We all kind of had that moment in our own place when we found out about that trade. When, look, Todd Hundley was, in a lot of ways, the face of the team. He hit the 41 home runs in 1996. He was the homegrown guy. He had come up years early, and we watched him develop into the power hitter that he was. He's obviously hurt at the time you mentioned it. The team didn't have a lot of offense. When you guys get Piazza, did you think it could work with Todd? I mean, we saw the experiment in the outfield. First base was never going to happen because John Olerud's on the team. But what did you think about how it was going to play out with Todd Hundley and if it could work with Todd being on this team with Mike Piazza?
Well, again, I think because this deal was so Nelson-driven, from what I gathered later, I don't think the state of affairs with the personnel was really taken into consideration. I mean, I remember Todd coming in and say, don't play me anywhere else. Give me a day and give him a day. I'll play him. I'll be the catcher here. This is my job. And I had no response for him. You know, I was just looking at him like thinking, wow, I have a situation here that I have to deal with. And then, the experiment failed where everyone said he could play left field, and I said, are you sure? And, when that didn't work, we had no choice other than to try to find another home for him because, Mike seemed like and turned out to be a better player.
Yeah. No question about that. All right, so then you get Piazza, and you guys look like you're steaming to the playoffs in 98. And then basically you lose like the last six, I think it was six or seven in a row to end the year, and you don't make the playoffs that year. How about that, Bob?
Was there a wild card that year?
Yeah, yes. I think so, yeah.
Yes.
Sure.
Oh, yes.
There was one wild card, right?
Yes, yeah. And it was a tie between the Giants and the Cubs in 1998.
Right, that's right, 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 right.
Well, and how many wins did they have?
89. It was by one game. Yes.
Wow, you guys just needed to really win one game down the stretch, and you didn't. That's
and you would
happened.
Have been in the three-way tie,
right,
yeah.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm trying to remember it, and I don't remember it that well, to tell you the truth, guys, and I'm hoping these tapes could help me. You know, I had year-end reviews and all that stuff. In my life, I never was really one to look back. I always wanted to look forward and let everybody else look back, and maybe this is going to be a little time where I can and figure that whole thing out. Was that also, that's like the second year, or was it the first, the second year of interleague play?
It was
right?
The second league
yeah,
of
second
year.
Year 90, yeah, 97 play. Was the first year, right.
Yeah. Right, right. And we had to play the Yankees double time, right?
No, in 97 and 98, it was only three times. In 99, that's when they doubled it up to
right,
six.
That's right, that's right.
But by the way, Bobby, I'm jealous of you. I wish I didn't remember the end of 1998. Trust me.
Yeah, you're lucky. You don't want to remember it, Bob. You know?
Well, I really don't, and I wish I could. Another game, we would have been in the playoffs. My goodness. And luckily, that didn't deter us because 99, we came back even stronger.
99 to me was the best team you had there, Bob. Even though you guys went to the World Series in 2000, the 99 team, you had Olerud, you had that great infield that you had there. The problem was you guys just couldn't get through the Braves. I mean, that really was the problem.
Yeah, still the Braves, wasn't it? Yeah, and 99 was a team that I really liked. My gosh. You know, because most of us, most of that group really played together. You know, and Mike was now solidified. You know, John
at first
was solidified. You know, we had it going, and it was fun. I mean, the infield, my goodness, everyone was as good as there was at their position defensively, for sure. And, you know, we had a little punch where, you know, you have a hitter like John Olerud, who is probably as good a hitter as I ever got to coach. And interestingly enough, he implored the walk. He was great at walking, and people kind of got down on him because of that. And, you know, 10 years later, 15 years later, people started to appreciate the walk a lot more.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. Nowadays,
didn't he hit 352 that year? What, didn't he hit like 352 all route that year? Was that the year he hit 350?
I think it was, 1999, I think, was the big year that he had.
Yeah.
He was a very, very good Met. Actually, you know what? It was 1998. It was the year before.
The year before.
98, he was bad. Yeah. But he was great in 99. Because what he was doing at first base, you know, I would always say that he had great range at first base. And people say, well, he's not very quick on his feet. And I would say, no, he has great range when he's on the bag. I thought that he was able to move up the right field line, down toward home plate, and out toward the infield, as well as up because he was 6 feet five. Better than any first baseman that I ever saw. He covered more ground than anyone else. I guess in basketball they call it length, you know, where a defender is able to outstretch and have good vertical and also have good length side to side. John had that.
Well, I remember you used to employ a strategy, and I think it was with John Olerud a lot, where he would play in front of the base runner, almost blocking their view. What was your thinking behind that strategy?
Okay, so it wasn't to have to block the view of the runner. It was that we had lousy moves out on the mound. Our left-handers, you know, didn't have deception, and they had high leg kicks. So what runners were doing there in 97 when I first got there, as soon as Al picked up his leg, they'd take off. As soon as Johnny picked up his leg, they'd take off. There were a couple other, Brian Bohannon, I think, might have been one of the left-handers who, you know, had the big leg kick. So I tried to develop something that would impede the runner going on first movement. So fielder, and Olerud was spectacular at this, would stand so that the runner would see him, not block the view of the pitcher, but that the runner would see him as he was looking at the pitcher. And then as the pitcher made his first move, John would make a move back to first base. Well, if you're human, when that move goes back to first base, you either go back to first base or you freeze to say, oh, are they picking me off? And that kept the runners from going on first move. And once in a while, he had a sign with the pitcher where when they lifted their leg up on the first move, he would continue on to first base. And we picked off some runners. And it almost totally shut down the running play.
I don't know if you got a chance to see this, but I've been, you know, when there was baseball at spring training, I was watching obviously as many spring training games as I could, and I noticed Luis Rojas trying a similar thing, and it was making me think back to you. I'm watching the first baseman play in front of the runner, so hopefully when we get a season, we may see, Met fans, a return to that strategy from Luis Rojas to the old Bobby Valentine days of the late 90s. So I'd assume you get a kick out of that if that happens.
There's no reason you shouldn't if you're dealing with the left-handers. I'm not sure that it really works with right-handed pitchers as effectively as it does with left-handers. But, you know, the other thing that we did that infield did so well and so perfectly is that they instituted a shift when the ball was being delivered.
Right.
Okay, so we would play deep at times with a man on third base, and as the pitcher was ready to deliver the ball, they would shift into an infield in position. Or sometimes half of the infield would shift into an infield in position. And what that does, and why other teams don't do it, is probably just because my teams did it. what it does is it freezes the guy on third base. It doesn't allow him to have a go-on-contact mode when you're on third base, because you're thinking the infield's back. And so what the third base coach says is, hey, the infield's back, let it clear the pitcher. Okay, because when the infield's back and you're on third base, if it's a ground ball, all it has to do is clear the pitcher, and then you're safe at home. In this case, the infield's back. He says, let it clear the pitcher, and then the infield will charge and go into the infield in position, or half of the infield would charge and go into the infield in position. What does the coach say in that split second of time? He usually says, oh, damn, what do we do now?
Right.
You understand?
Yeah.
There were many a runner left on third base, and it also distracted the hitter, because a lot of times there's a man on third base and the infield's back. There are some hitters who just take a mindset, well, I have a RBI here. All I have to do is hit a ground ball to the second baseman as a right-handed hitter, or the second baseman as a left-handed hitter, and I get an RBI. So he has that thought as the pitcher's ready to deliver the ball, and as he delivers it, the infield changes, and now he has to change thought. You follow my concept there?
Yeah, it's part of why I want you managing again. Joe's right.
That's right.
Get him back.
But again, it's not for everyone.
I mean, I understand.
If the infielders don't buy into that, if they don't time it properly, if they're lazy and they're kind of starting early on the infield in, or they, you know, one guy comes and the other guy doesn't, it's not a functional way of playing defense. But that entire group bought in, and they were spectacular at it. Spectacular.
Well, that was one of the great defensive infields ever, so there's no doubt about that.
No doubt.
Bobby, you got to run. We could do like another. We could finish the show with you here till 6 o'clock.
You guys are the best. You know, I have one of those WebEx meetings at 4:30.
I see.
You know, we have planned at Sacred Heart University a gala at the end of the year in September, where Joe Torre and I have agreed to help raise funds for scholarships and do a Remember 2000 gala, you know, with the Yankees and Mets coming in and all that stuff.
Right.
And this meeting is, this WebEx is to decide whether or not we're staying on track or we're going to change the date. So I got to get on it, guys.
Well, we appreciate
Bobby.
Best of luck with that.
Yeah. Take care of yourself. Stay safe.
Anytime.
Bobby, right?
Sorry I talked too long, guys.
Never too long, Bobby. Never too long.
Thanks, Bobby.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.